How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. A lung collapse is serious and painful. The condition will land you in the ER, and in some cases, it can even threaten a person's life. So why did it take 6 collapsed lungs over several years for one Chicago woman to find out what was happening with her body? You might know Britt Julius from her music criticism in the Chicago Tribune, but I recently sat down to hear her health story. She shared the multiple ordeals she faced trying to get a diagnosis and trying to get the medical system to recognize her pain. It's an experience women, especially women of color, say is all too common in America.
I started having a lot of issues in terms of my breathing in 2017, but I grew up with asthma, so I just assumed it was asthma.
Yeah.
I can distinctly, though, remember, it was maybe 2 or 3 days after Lollapalooza, and I woke up one day in bed, and I was like, oh, wow, it feels like someone's trying to stab me with a knife.
Wow.
Yeah. It was.
So these were sharp pains.
Sharp, like every breath was a pain. And so I was in bed for a good, 2 to 3 hours, and then I kind of crawled out of bed to my bathroom because I had to go to the bathroom. And then I was in there for like an hour or so, just not really being able to move, not understanding what was going on. Eventually the pain kind of not really subsided, but was enough for me to kind of sit up, put clothes on. And I took an Uber to urgent care, and they were like, well, it's probably your gallbladder. It's probably from what you're eating, maybe not eating the best food. And I'm thinking, okay. And so they're just like, yeah, just, rest and go on a brat diet. And so, for a couple of days I was eating, bananas and rice and applesauce and toast.
Because it was your gallbladder.
Exactly.
And we'll talk more about that. But I mean, this pain, the way that you describe it is so vivid when reading your story. I mean, how long had you been living with the pain before you finally got a diagnosis?
So it had been a little over like 4 years before I sort of officially got a diagnosis. And this was during my second hospitalization, right? So the first hospitalization, it was just classified as a spontaneous pneumothorax. So, I went to urgent care after a week of feeling like I had breathing issues. I thought I had COVID maybe, and so I got tested for that. Went to the hospital because they at urgent care were like, your right lung has collapsed. They thought it was a spontaneous pneumothorax. So
what does that mean?
Basically, there was no real cause, right? So there was nothing that I could really recall that would have caused it. I was like, well, we're in quarantine. I haven't actually been doing anything that could cause this to happen. And so after a couple of days, once my lung had been reinflated, I, went home. It wasn't until March of 2021, after we had sort of really pushed and we're like, it could be this thing. My OBGYN had mentioned it a couple years ago. I have many of the common symptoms that, seem to occur around this time, that the team of OBGYNs who were there, as well as the team of pulmonologists, were like, okay, we actually think that this is thoracic endometriosis. Once I got surgery and they were able to, not only do a pleuridesis procedure, but also sort of remove any inflammatory tissue they saw in my lungs and diaphragm, then they were like, okay, yes, that's what this is.
It's interesting hearing you speak so candidly about your lung collapsing and getting, reinflated.
Right.
Were you not terrified?
The first time I was very terrified. The second time I was actually really upset because it was something that, my mother had kind of mentioned during the first time. We had sort of brought it up, but they were like, it's rare. We don't think that's what it is. you know, we haven't met anyone who's had this. So the second time I was just like really upset and thinking that, you know, I don't know when I'm going to get out of this hospital, you know, because no one's taking me seriously. And just, you know, there was all of this waiting. Well, we're going to wait and see if it reinflates and stays reinflated. That's what, you know, kind of
like reinflates on its own.
So I had a chest tube in first time and the second time to remove lots of like blood and other sort of like free fluids that was around my pleural space. And so they were like, if your lung can stay inflated for more than a day, then we'll release you from the hospital. And it just wouldn't. It would reinflate and then collapse and then reinflate and
collapse. Oh my goodness. So this rare form of endometriosis that you were diagnosed with, had you even heard of it before?
I hadn't heard of it until the first time that the OBGYN I had at the time had mentioned it. She had really just mentioned it in passing because I had mentioned sort of the stabbing pain that I felt. And I was like, you know, this is maybe happening around my period. I think it's, you know, and I was like, it's only happened 3 or 4 times, but it's been significant enough to really knock me out. She was like, yeah, she's like, it might be thoracic endometriosis. She's like, I've heard of that, but I don't know. It's really rare. Like people don't get it, things like that. So that's when I first heard of it. I did some research around it and I said, oh, this kind of sounds like that's what this is, you know, but, my symptoms were pretty controlled around then. So, I wasn't getting lung collapses back then.
So I want to go back to what we initially talked about when you would mention the pain at your different checkups, your different visits, and lots of other things were being thrown at you, or maybe nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Gallbladder, et cetera, et cetera. Tell us more about those experiences.
Yeah. It was really frustrating. It was the sort of thing that it felt like I would have my annual exam or I was coming in for other reasons. I had other reproductive issues like fibroids and things like that. And I would always mention it, you know, I was like, well, this is a pattern I'm noticing. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me anything about it? And, you know, it had gotten dismissed in the past as just being cramps. Again, like the gallbladder issue, something related to my diet, tied to my fibroids, tied to, I had 2 ovarian cysts in the past as well. So, because oftentimes a lot of like reproductive issues, they kind of appear very similar. But something that was happening to me that I had mentioned a couple times was just this. I was like, yeah, but my asthma is acting up. I'm having these breathing issues. Like this has never been an issue for me in my 20s and teens and things like that. So it got frustrating, but it also by then had sort of become the sort of thing where I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to have to figure out what I can do on my own. And if I do have this thing, then, you know, what are things that have sort of helped me feel a little bit better?
So along this journey, and it's been years, when was the first time you felt seen or heard by a doctor or nurse?
Really seen and heard, I think probably during my second hospitalization I'd gotten like a new pulmonologist and, you know, she didn't know a lot about the condition. She still really doesn't know a lot about the condition, but she was like, this is probably what it is. So there's no point in trying to sort of pretend that that's not what this is.
Right.
So it was really, I think her, and then also I had gotten a new thoracic surgeon to kind of do the pleurodesis procedure and the resection and things like that. And they just kind of took me seriously. And it wasn't just sort of, you know, doctors coming in every day or two and sort of being like, how you feeling? And I'm like,
right.
Well, I'm still in a hospital gown in, you know, the middle of COVID with a collapsed lung, with a chest tube, and you're not giving me any answers and you're not really helping me in any capacity.
Right. And even, you know, when you mentioned those doctors saying, you know, they've heard of it, but it's so rare.
Mm-hmm.
There was no offer at the time to test you for endometriosis.
So with thoracic endometriosis, it's a little bit like, with both forms of, you know, or all forms of endometriosis, it's really hard to do any sort of like traditional proper testing. And oftentimes when women have endometriosis, it can take, you know, up to 7, 8, 9 years to get a diagnosis. Typically, some form of surgery is what is how they get like a real, true, proper diagnosis because they can see the endometrial tissue, right? For me, though, some recommendations that I had gotten from endometriosis centers, like the Center for Endometriosis Care, rather, with Dr. Sinervo, who's a doctor I had interviewed for this essay that I wrote, you know, their guidelines say you should be getting an MRI. Like that is the best way to sort of like see, because, you know, typically when your lung collapses, you're getting an x-ray, maybe a CT, yeah, but typically an x-ray. And I was getting x-rays every single day, you know? So they're like, you're not going to see everything, you know, in an x-ray. You need to like sort of do deeper, longer imaging, and it needs to be more extensive. And so, yeah, so it wasn't that they, you know, they didn't even really know that was sort of the imaging that was required. And even if I sort of, you know, when I was there, I showed them, I was like, well, this is what he says. He's the top surgeon. You know, he's like, you should get the MRI. They're like, we can't just give you an MRI.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Now, your experience of getting dismissed happens especially for women of color. I happen to know this firsthand. I'm talking about friends. I'm talking about aunts that I have in my mind's eye right now who have very similar stories that led to different diagnoses. It can also happen at a young age. Now, according to research from the University of Washington and the National Library of Medicine, pediatricians in a 2012 study, they had an implicit bias favoring white patients, and the likelihood of prescribing appropriate pain medication decreased only for black patients. What does that make you think?
That sounds very similar to my experience when I was in the hospital. You know, just getting pain meds was a really, you know, big deal for me. The first time I had a chest tube inserted in me, they were supposed to give me both a numbing agent and then sort of use an IV to give me some sort of medicine.
Yeah.
And it was so incredibly painful. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. The next time I was hospitalized, in my medical records, it had said like, oh, it doesn't say that anyone actually gave you that medicine, that IV medicine from the last time you had a chest tube. So I was like, oh, that's why it was so painful. That's why it was like horrific, you know? So it doesn't surprise me when it comes to things like that, you know, because that was very much, you know, my experience. So, you know, throughout this process, throughout this journey, I have met a lot of, you know, women and non-binary people who are going through endo. And, you know, especially the women of color, they say the same things. They're like, what are you doing? What are you treating? And asking, you know, me questions. I'm like, this is what I had to figure out because no one told me anything. And clearly their doctors are not as well.
Yeah, this dismissal is particularly common for people when they're experiencing menstrual pain, to your point. There's a health charity called Wellbeing of Women. It surveyed 3,000 people and found that they were often met with dismissive phrases like, it's just your period, when they experience those kinds of debilitating symptoms, the heavy bleeding, the intense pain. How hard was it for you, Britt, through all of this to advocate for yourself and keep advocating? It sounds like energy consuming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think those, you know, first couple of years when I was able to kind of manage things before I had a proper diagnosis, you know, it was easy to advocate for myself because I had figured out a routine and, you know, I would talk to lots of other people about it. But once I got hospitalized and especially that second hospitalization, which ended up being almost 3 weeks, you know, just really defeated. I didn't know if I would ever get out of the hospital. I thought, you know, that first time I was hospitalized, it was basically over a weekend, you know? And so I was like, that was easy. But after the first week, I'm like, what is this? Is this never going to get resolved? You know, and I just was really tired. My father would come and see me every day. We'd play Scrabble and he tried to teach me chess. That was a disaster. But,
oh boy.
You know.
And how was he responding through this entire thing? Was it more of the, you know, try to distract her, try to keep her calm, or could you see that he was affected?
I think in the beginning. And then he was sort of asking, you know, I sort of brought up to him, I was like, my lung keeps collapsing at night, you know, like when you're here with me during the day, it's okay. But at night when I'm getting, you know, all of these blood draws and all these things, like I'm feeling just tired and defeated and weak in a way that I don't feel during the day. And he actually helped me become more of an advocate for myself. He was like, we need to talk to someone about this. I'm going to find who the appropriate person is that we can go to about these things. You know, I'm going to find out who the doctor should be, things like that. Because after that, you know, first week or so, I wasn't seeing the pulmonologist very often, had maybe seen her about 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
Was only seeing nurses and the x-ray tech. And yeah, so he was a really good support system.
That's good to hear. Now, you recently wrote about your story. That's where I found it. It was in today.com.
Yes.
Why was this story something you wanted to share now?
I think for two reasons. So actually, the first is that back in 2019, they actually came to Chicago and did a segment on women with, like, you know, fibroids, endometriosis, et cetera, and yes, how they, you know, handle it. And so they came and followed me around for a few days. And, you know, I had messaged them. I was like, a lot has changed since that.
Yes.
I was like, I really kind of lost control over my symptoms that I, you know, had felt really proud that I knew how to control back in 2019. So that was the first reason. The second one, I think I'd really sort of made a promise to myself that I wanted to actually talk about these things. As a writer, as a journalist, I had just never really written about any of these experiences.
Yeah.
Minus maybe a couple of Instagram posts.
I mean, this is a far cry from your music beat.
Right. Like, it's not, you know, reviewing a Craig David show, the Chicago
right.
Theater, or writing about Beyonce.
Right.
It's
deeply personal.
Absolutely. So I was like, I need to get this out for my own mental health, but also, you know, I've created a couple TikToks about my experiences, like being in the hospital mm-hmm. and what it feels like.
Do you hear from other women?
That was the thing. Like, I, you know, there's one video that I created, and it is still to this day my most popular TikTok. And it's just women, they continue to find it because they're searching for it. They want some answers.
What's your TikTok handle?
At Britticisms, just like it is everywhere else.
At Britticisms.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's just, I was like, we need to talk about this more because it's becoming clearly more people are being affected by it.
Well, we are certainly glad you're talking about it. How are you feeling today? Do you still have pain?
I still get pain. Absolutely.
How do you handle that?
You know, it depends. So in 2021, 2022, my pain was mostly manageable. I got COVID at the end of 2022, and that seemed to I had a rebound in terms mm-hmm. of symptoms and pain and things like that. And so I went through physical therapy to kind of help with sort of how to treat the pain and when it comes up and try to prevent things, you know, from happening. I see a doctor who's kind of helped me with pain medicine
yeah.
that, you know, I take if it starts to kind of come up around my period, you know,
yeah.
typically to kind of help with sort of the muscle spasms and things like that might happen in my arm, my shoulder, my chest, and my back. And the most important thing that I've kind of found, honestly, is trying to manage like inflammation and anxiety. And so I'm really trying to, you know, stay calm, mm-hmm. you know, not get worked up, not eat foods that can make me feel really inflamed. And that's kind of the best that I can do.
That's your new normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's your new normal. But having a name for this.
Right.
It must help.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's there. It's in my medical records. The doctors know. They see the surgeries that I had, the chest tubes, the, you know, rehab, you know, rehabilitation after the surgery and everything. So I no longer feel crazy, which is how I felt for a long time.
Yeah. Britt Julius is a freelance journalist, editor, essayist, and a music critic for the Chicago Tribune. You can read her powerful story at today.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Linnea Dominic. Do you want to hear more conversations about health? Well, tune in to Reset on Tuesdays. You can also give us suggestions for future conversations by leaving us a voicemail at 888-915-9945. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.